one by one, their seats were emptied, and one by one they went away. I peered through a crack in the stage wall as the family of impeccably dressed strangers rose from their seats and left my home for the night. They were loud in hushed tones, their collective murmurs rising to a crescendo of meaningless commotion as they parted ways with the Palais Garnier Opera House. I imagined the audience spilling out into the Parisian streets, discussing the performance they had seen. None of them saw me. Nobody sees me. I am a secret, never touched, seen or heard, nor loved. Les Morts Vivants by Stephen Chapman. There are many, like me, whose ghastly forms must be hidden away. Mother told me this when I begged and pleaded to play in the streets with the other boys and girls. She told me often that I was not a boy, but a monster. Les morts vivants, the living dead, and I must remain unseen. 13 years of age, and I had only seen what dwelled in the innards of my opera house home. I scurried to the next gap in the wall, hoping for a fleeting glance of a group that seemed to be in no hurry to leave the theatre. I like to imagine the strangers as my family, someone to love, even if they could not return my affections. An older gentleman laughed with a well-dressed couple as a young girl waited patiently by his side. Her elaborate yellow dress shimmered in the light as she twirled back and forth. Her auburn hair, tied in complex knots, caught the light from the chandelier, and the glow enchanted my soul. She scanned the room, ignorant of the grown-up conversation above her, and turned to look in my direction. My heart quickened, but there was no chance of being seen. She saw a wall and a stage before it so grand it caught even the most fleeting of attention spans. Nothing more. The adults let out a raucous laugh, loud enough to regain the girl's attention. The older gentleman shook the young man's hand with vigour and a grin on his face. The grin sloped into a crooked smirk as he took the woman's hand and held it as if it were a delicate flower blooming from a snowy precipice. Time seemed to slow as the old man's lips touched the lady's skin, and I marvelled at what it would feel like to touch, or to be touched, so intimately. The gentleman waved a hearty cheerio and watched the couple leave. As the door softly closed behind them, he dropped his smile and grabbed the girl by her arm. He grumbled something, not loud enough for me to hear, but his tone was clear as he led her through a door next to the stage. And with that, my family breaks apart. Will it be complete one day? Inside, quickly. Mother's voluminous skirt blocked the doorway, and I had to battle through the folds of crisp material to gain entrance to our shared dwelling. Mother lifted her arms high above her waist and winced as I fought my way inside. Be careful! Where were you? Were you seen? I shook my head and stepped into the living room. The fireplace was burning, and I could smell food cooking on the stove. The door to my room was open. Mother must have been looking for me. Her bedroom door remained shut, as always. Our dwelling here was partial compensation for Mother's work with the theatre. I did not have a bedroom per se, but a small storage room Mother deemed suitable to hide me away in. Good. I do wish you wouldn't go out during the performances. I would be the one to bear the burden if you were ever caught.
I know, Mother.
And where on earth is your mask? You know how your face turns my stomach so close to supper time.
I forgot.
I hadn't forgotten. I hate my mask. It is itchy and stiff and scrapes noisily on stone as I crawl through the tight tunnels of my playground beneath the theatre. Well, fetch it at once while I warm the food. Mother turned the key in the lock and removed it from the door. She faced me but looked down, smiling, smoothing the shining layers of red and black costume material.
Aren't you going to change, Mother?
Her smile faltered as she gave me a look that only a mother could. She slapped me across the face, and her sharp nail scraped a groove of flesh from my cheek. It makes me feel beautiful, something you wouldn't understand. If that fool of a costume designer wants it back, he can come and remove it himself. I stared at the floor, tracing the thin gaps between stone flags with my gaze. Shame burnt my cheeks to a red tinge, and I fought desperately to hold back the tears forming in my eyes. I imagined the cracks were enormous tunnels arranged to form a labyrinth. I could stay lost in them forever, if only I could shrink myself down to fit. Blood dripped from my cheek into the crevices, and I imagined a single drop carrying me away in a wave of red and pain. I did not mean to upset you, my child. It isn't fair to try and explain beauty to someone so... She stared with thinly veiled disgust at the hand she had used to strike me. Bring the plates, but don't forget your mask first. As I scuttled to my room to retrieve my counterfeit face, I heard Mother muttering to herself while she washed her hands. The mask was lying on my bed, and even without features, it mocked me with a ghostly grin. I draped the silent shield over my face and hurried to the dining table. We ate our meal without conversation. The only sounds were cutlery clicking against the crockery and Mother muttering miserably. I knew better than to interrupt. Afterwards, she retired to her dressing table and began the ritual of removing her costume and makeup. She used a small key to open the drawer that nestled under the surface of the table. Whenever Mother used her mirror, I had to remain in my room. She told me the small device allowed her to see herself, and if I were to ever glance into it, the horror would be too much to bear. She also said one of me was almost too much to stomach, and if she ever had to see two of me at once, even for a moment, she would go mad and never be able to look after me again. Marooned on my tiny bed, with nothing to do but listen to Mother sing to herself, I soon fell asleep. Darkness greeted me as I opened my eyes. Voices roused me from my dreamless slumber.
Well, I refuse to accept your answer.
The old rickety bed frame creaked slightly as I left it and crept to the door of my room.
He's not your concern. He's my burden and mine alone. He's not a burden, for heaven's sake. Keep your voice down. This discussion is over. If you try to see him again, I'll tell them everything. Your reputation, your career, Taroga, there will be nothing left. That is a promise.
Silence followed. I peeked through the keyhole of my door, trying to catch a glimpse of the man. But Mother blocked my view. The candle, sitting on the dining table, cast a shadow of the stranger high upon the walls. Footsteps slid across the stone, and the familiar creak of the door mixed with my shallow breathing. The door slammed, and I jumped at the sound, racing back to bed before Mother could return to check on me. Rats scurried across my arms and legs as I crawled. They had grown accustomed to seeing me over the years, and generations of these creatures were both companion and guide as I traversed dark and damp tunnels. They scurried about me, avoiding the flame of my torch like water flowing around a rock in a river. Long abandoned passages and paths stretched out before me, leading to the unknown and the forgotten. My home. Getting lost is not a worry for me. In fact, it is exactly what I desire, to be lost in the brick and stone, out of sight of judgmental eyes. For a while, at least. A splash exploded ahead, and I smiled at the thought of the Seine. When the Palais Garnier was built, the River Seine refused to be redirected by man's handiwork. No matter the amount of water the builders pumped from the foundations, the river always returned home, until one day they gave up and built the theatre around and in the water, creating vast chambers to allow the river to stay exactly where it wanted to be. Building and nature working in harmony to solidify the foundations. There were more splashes, and I spotted my rodent friends jumping into a section of the river exposed by a large hole in the floor. I rested my torch on the ground and dropped into the water. It consumed me with a ferocity that would terrify someone unaccustomed to the dark and the cold. It touched every part of me, flowed under my clothes, across my face. It caressed my skin with icy, cold fingers, reluctant to let go. And I allowed the water to pull me slowly into its gloomy depths for a moment, before resisting and starting to swim to the surface. My acquaintances paddled excitedly by my side, some using me as a raft in order to avoid the freezing water. We glided through tunnels as one, seeking an unseen exit to unknown chambers. One by one, the rats departed onto a ledge that ran parallel with the sides of the watery vault. And I was alone. With a twist of my hips, I rolled onto my back and lifted my legs. I floated on the surface and let the water carry me on its own whim. When the momentum of the water dispersed, I started to sink and had to wave my arms to avoid slipping under the surface. As I kicked, my toes dug into soft mud, and I stood to survey my domain. I had not been here before. The void was brighter than normal. Somewhere close, a torch was burning. I waded slowly to the edge of the water and pulled myself onto the sandy bank. It felt warm compared to the river, and I clung to the heat as I shivered, teeth chattering noisily in the gloom. Once my body had warmed, I got to my feet to investigate the light ahead. A voice caused me to pause mid-step, foot raised inches from the ground. It was a female voice. Mother. No, not mother. A young voice singing. I didn't recognize the tune. I continued towards the melodious call. The walls danced with light, and I could see the voice's shadow now, frolicking on the floor ahead. There was no way to know which direction the person was facing. If it were away from where I was standing, it would afford me the chance to quietly observe them. But if it were toward me, they would spot me the moment I poked my head around the corner. Mother's words rang in my ears. I would be the one to bear the burden if you were ever caught. The blood boiled in my veins, and I stepped forward, half hoping I would be caught, and that Mother would suffer for it. The sight before me took the breath from my chest and calmed my frantic mind. A young girl, the young girl from the day before. She skipped on the spot, her auburn hair catching the light of the torch's flame. She smiled at me without breaking a step and waved a cheery hello.
Where did you come from?
Of all the reactions I had expected if I were to ever be seen or caught, this one never crossed my mind. Fear? Disgust? Horror, yes, but acceptance? Blissful ignorance? I thought myself daydreaming until the young girl came close enough for me to smell her. An exquisite mixture of honey and roses and sweat. She was so close I could hear her breathing. But the girl didn't run or scream. Instead, she smiled and the tunnel seemed brighter for it. We were the same height, although she looked a few years older than me. I found it difficult to bear her gaze.
Did you swim? That is the river in that direction, isn't it? Is that how you got to my cave?
Cave? I mustered finally, more embarrassed and curious than afraid for my secret.
Do you have water in your ears? Did you just move to the Garnier?
I shook my head.
I've lived here all my life.
Well, how curious that we've never bumped into each other before.
The girl gestured wildly.
This is my cave. Somewhere I can come and reflect on life. And practice my dancing as well, of course.
She curtsied, and her smile sent tingles across my scalp. I touched my face unconsciously. My mask! I had left it at the entrance to the tunnel near my home, wedged behind rotting brick and mortar, where it would remain until I returned. I lifted my arm, burying my face in the crook of my elbow, and turned to hide my terrible visage.
I'm sorry. I forgot. I never wear it in the tunnels.
Although I could not see the girl, I heard humour in her words.
You are a strange one, aren't you?
Footsteps betrayed her position, and I stepped backwards to keep the distance between us.
What don't you wear in the tunnels?
My face. I should never have taken it off.
Oh, you took your face off?
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
You needn't be sorry.
You shouldn't have to see this.
For such a young fellow, you're quite handsome, really. Although I prefer my men with a touch of sophistication and experience, of course.
Handsome? She called me handsome. The girl was as broken as I was.
I don't understand. Are you afraid?
Now why would I be afraid? You seem perfectly harmless.
My mouth opened, but I was unable to speak. Her laughter was exquisite agony, the voice of an angel mocking me. She didn't think I was handsome. She was taunting me. The desire to be lost, to be separate from the world, was overwhelming. I turned and raced from the girl's hideaway. The river's current was too strong to return the way I entered, so I stumbled into unknown reaches. Blackness enveloped me, and without light to guide me, I slowed my pace. The sound of my breathing bounced off cold walls, and I used it to orient myself in the obscurity of blindness. My shame turned to anger, and I felt my face begin to warm with a glow of wild fury. How dare she? How dare she toy with a person's feelings like that? A few steps later, my eyes started to grow accustomed to the dark. It meant a light source was near. Here in the tunnels, there is no adjusting. It's all or nothing. The light of a burning flame, or a deep darkness that envelops all. but the light source was not ahead. It was coming from behind me. The girl had followed me. As the darkness receded, I glanced around, looking for somewhere to hide. There were no crevices for me to crawl into, no walls or abutments to hide behind. Instead, I climbed the ancient walls, jamming fingers and toes into cracks wherever I found them, scaling the stone with ease. There were no ledges or niches where the wall met the ceiling. I relied on the simple fact that people rarely look up when they walk. A theatre full of awe-inspiring decoration rising into the heavens, yet most people are content to watch their own shuffling feet. By the time I had slowed my breathing, the light was close enough I could make out my surroundings with clarity. The tunnel was similar to the rest, but I took in the minor details all the same, adding the passage to the map of the labyrinth in my mind. The flame-haired girl rounded the corner, and I braced myself so as not to fidget and loosen any debris. I held my breath and waited. She was breathing heavily from her rush to catch up with me, but she moved now with a degree of caution. The tunnels were a mystery to her. She stopped directly under me and looked back toward her so-called cave before glancing into the tunnel she presumed I had taken. The girl looked a little sad, probably at the fact I wasn't there to make fun of anymore. In her haste to locate me, she moved on and away before I ran out of breath. I exhaled and watched plumes of condensation dance in the cool air as her torchlight diminished and my blessed darkness returned. Home again. A single candle burned in the corner of the living room, but it seemed too bright to my eyes. I fought the urge to smother the flame. Mother would know I had been out of the room if the candles were unburnt. I had retrieved my mask and fingered it now, reluctant to put it on once more. Hollow eyes stared up at me. They smirked somehow, mocking my true face. I threw the forgery to the ground and kicked it across the floor. It smacked against a wall and landed face up, still watching me. I turned my back on it and warmed myself by the fire in the living room. Yet still I could feel the mask peering into my abhorrent soul. As I stood, meaning to cover the mask, I heard a noise, a scraping sound, quiet enough to go unheard by most, but my ears were trained in the silence of the tunnels. The sound was familiar. A rat scratching at wood? No. The hairs on my neck tingled with realization. Someone was trying to open the door. Mother's words filled my head. You must not be caught. I ran for my mask. They would kill you if they see you. The door opened. Do not be seen. I raised the mask to cover my face. Don't be afraid. I'm a friend. The man standing in the doorway looked like a plump rat stuffed into expensive clothes. Tufts of dark hair spewed forth from under his hat, a strange triangle of material precariously balanced on top of his head. He was a stranger to my eyes, but I recognised that voice. The man who had already violated our chambers once before. The audacity of the break-in fueled my anger, and the girl's laughter still echoed in my ears. How dare she laugh at me? And how dare this daroga ignore Mother's warnings? I am le mort vivant. Should they not fear me? I lowered the mask once more and glared at him, waiting for the stranger to scream. but he did not. Instead, he stepped forward and beckoned to me, staring into my eyes with a chilling familiarity, as though I ought to know him.
"Come, come, we must leave at once."
I howled in my confusion and lunged at him. He tumbled off balance and we fell onto Mother's makeup table, crashing through the surface, splintering woods and shattering glass vials. The mask fell from my grip. Clutching both hands together with interlocking fingers, I brought my fist down as one, over and over, clubbing the man's chest, winding him. I grasped the stranger's greasy hair and slammed his head against the stone. Then I flung my left hand out, scrambling wildly for something to use as a weapon. My fingers wrapped around a shard of glass, and I lifted it high. But it wasn't glass. It was a silvery material. Mother's mirror. The splinter would reflect my face clearly, something I had only been able to see up until now in the surface of perfume bottles and phials, the ugly truth revealed faintly in the bumps and curves of the glass. I looked away quickly before I saw the true horror. The stranger gurgled beneath me, but he was out cold. Mother's dressing table was in bits, the drawer lying on top of a pile of splintered wood. Its contents glimmered in the candlelight, and I peered into it to see several small candles burning in pieces of glass. I resisted the urge to look so as not to suffer the face that would drive Mother to madness if she looked at me for too long. Mother! Her performance would be ending soon, and I would have to explain everything. How I'd left the door unlocked, that I wasn't wearing my mask when the man entered, and she would know! She would know I broke her mirror! The man groaned and shifted underneath me as I slid from his stomach. I needed to leave, at least until I could work out how to explain everything to Mother. My mask. I couldn't forget my mask. It was hard to locate in the chaos of the room, but I spotted it soon enough, poking out from a slab of wood resting against the wall. I pulled the mask to free it from its burden, but it moved more easily than expected. The mask wasn't wedged under anything. It was broken in half, simply resting against the edge of the wood. I scanned the room for the other half. The small chunks of white littered around my feet could only mean the remaining piece was smashed beyond recognition. It was too late. The man stirred and began to sit up, rubbing the back of his head. He called out my name, and I escaped the room before he could say anything more. Breathless, I ran for the nearest entrance to my tunnels. I ran until I could bear it no more. And then I fell to my knees. The reflection cutting into my hand was invisible in the darkness, but I stared at it until I slipped into dreams. During my slumber, I felt as if I were lost at sea, battered and tortured by endless waves crashing down and making it impossible to breathe. I woke with a start to find someone staring down at me.
"Hello, strange one."
The girl held a torch of flame close enough that I could feel the heat from the burning embers. Rats sat about the floor, some staying still and others dashing about pots of oil and piles of spent torches. The events of the previous evening, coupled with a night of terrible sleep, left me unable to care that the girl was mocking me once more. Instead, I watched her hair dangling over me, swaying back and forth, framing her magical smile. I pushed myself up into a sitting position and realised I had let go of the mirror in my sleep. Hands slapped at the cold floor as I searched for my hard-earned prize.
"Looking for this?"
The girl held the mirror in such a way that it reflected the torchlight into my eyes. I blinked out the brightness and grabbed for the fragment, but she jumped backwards and giggled to herself.
"Only a vain boy carries a mirror with him.
It's not mine."
"A trespasser and a thief to boot. Aren't you a talented young boy?"
"I'm not a trespasser. I live here, like you."
"I don't live here, silly boy."
"Who are you? Why are you tormenting me so?"
Rats scurried out of her path as she tiptoed back towards me. A graceful leap bridged the remaining gap between us, and she offered me the mirror. I snatched it from her and held it close to my chest. It was then I realised my hands were throbbing, and I looked down to see slices of pain traversing my palms. During the rough seas of a restless night, I had clasped the mirror a little too tight. As I flinched at the gashes in my flesh, the girl jumped up and whirled around on the balls of her feet, causing her hair and the flame of the torch to dance in unison.
"I am Violet, and I'm here because my lover is a cruel man who will not let me explore the city while he watches his plays. That's how I discovered my cave, my own part of the world, away from the touch of man."
"Your lover?"
"Yes. Philippe and I are touring the theatres of France, and he said he simply had to stop to see the Garnier. It's the most expensive ever constructed."
"Don't presume to tell me about the Garnier. I know it better than you know yourself."
"Is that right?"
Violet twirled her hands above her head and stood on tiptoes, walking towards me.
"Do you live here then, in the tunnels?"
"No. I live in a room with a bed."
"You have a room in the Garnier?"
"Well, Mother does."
"You still live with your mother?"
"But of course."
"How adorable."
"You don't live with your parents?"
She threw her head back and laughed.
"Oh, you silly boy. I'm not a child. I am 16 years old. I visit the most expensive restaurants in the world, drink in the finest bars, make love in beds with sheets so soft they make you moan with pleasure. Do you really think I could do all of that if I lived with my dreadfully boring parents?"
Violet stood tall and proud. She had it all. She had a life and a lover, and she travelled the world. It gave me hope that one day I, too, would see the world. I would see amazing sights and learn new things. And most importantly of all, I would be loved.
"You could come with us if you wish. I'm sure a handsome boy like you would have no trouble finding a lover."
"Why do you do that?"
I asked, frowning.
"Why do you keep mocking me?"
"I'd hardly call it mocking to compliment someone's looks. My dear, you may have a large nose, but if anything, it adds to your face. You're a handsome boy, but you would be an exquisite man."
I grimaced through the pain as I tried to understand why the girl was being so mean. Violet dropped her torch and wrenched the mirror from my hands. I yelped as the glass scored fresh cuts in the meat of my fingers.
"Oh, look, you silly boy."
She held the mirror in front of me and scowled in frustration. Before I had a chance to turn my head, I caught a glimpse of my face, lit by the smoky torch now resting on the floor. The countenance that greeted me was familiar. Mother's features were reflected in the blood-stained glass. High cheekbones and thin lips looked as if they had been stolen directly from Mother's face. My eyes sparkled with the same emerald green as one of Mother's scornful stares. In past explorations of my face, I had felt hideously globular features, but the image before me told a different story. My nose was large, just as the girl had said, but it was square and firm and straight.
My eyebrows and my hair were darker than Mother's. She never let me see it when she cut it, but I had pulled chunks off in the past to look at it. It was different, seeing it as an unkempt mess upon my head. It rolled over my ears and covered my forehead. I poked and prodded features that had previously seemed grotesque. I was not hideous at all. I was like everyone else. The world came rushing back, and I blinked my eyes, realizing I was still in the dark, damp tunnels. My world was a lie. If I was like everyone else, then my entire life was a waste. I might as well not have existed. I was nothing.
Would you like to see the world with me and Philippe?
I can't leave. Mother would... Oh, God! Please, don't tell anyone you saw me. I can't be discovered. Mother will...
Your mother would what? Doesn't she love you? Doesn't she want you to live your life?
Mother cares for me. She works hard every day to keep me hidden.
She keeps you hidden, and you have the audacity to say that she cares for you.
There was a calm air to Violet's words that annoyed me more than the accusations she made.
Of course she does. She's my mother. She's looked out for me all of my life. And in return, you can't talk to anyone or do anything. Well, that doesn't sound like much of a life.
You know nothing about me.
Apparently no one does. You're a dirty little secret, and your so-called mother sounds ashamed of you.
Mother loves me.
She lies to you and conceals you from the world. Love isn't conditional. Love is a passion, and not giving a damn what anyone else thinks. Why on earth would she not want anyone to see you? Because of this ridiculous nonsense you keep spouting about your face.
I'm not.
She lied to you, dear boy. There's nothing wrong with you, apart from having lived no life at all. Come with me and see the world.
I have to leave. Please don't tell anyone about me. The words tumbled from my mouth as I backed away. Violet matched my pace, but with longer strides. She reached me and leant forward. I thought she would whisper something, but instead she kissed my cheek. A warmth spread outwards from her lips, infesting my body, paralysing me, and setting every nerve ending on fire. I felt alive and powerful for the first time. Violet grinned.
You're my dirty little secret now.
Les Morts Vivants was written by Stephen Chapman and performed by Dion Winton Pollock. You can find this story in Primogen, Origin of Monsters, from Stitched Smile Publications, copyright 2017. Links to the author, the publisher, and the book can be found in the show notes, along with attributions for the music and sound effects that I've used. Les Morts Vivants was a Fine-Toothed Comb production.